Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die.
Hello, folks. We're definitely strapping our boots on. Sorry about the wait to come back to the show. This is the continuation of our Friday night, June 6th show. We are bringing it back to the conversation. And in doing so, we will go ahead and bring Dan back on the line as we wait for our other callers to call back in. Thank you very much, Dan, for calling to the show. We had something going on, but we were able to get a continuation here so hopefully we could get folks to listen to the rest of our topic from last night, technically last night, and come on to this show. So thank you very much for calling back. Okay, I don't hear you, Dan.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Are you there? I've been hearing you. You can hear me. Oh, that's then we can hear each other. You know, this is the funniest thing. And I seriously, I am amused. People have been asking me for years now, aren't you afraid that they are going to come and get you? And I said, no, because they aren't stupid. First of all, I'm a big mouth. Second of all, I have a history of not backing down. Third of all, I have a history when I was a young man of not backing down even if it's violence and it's going to cost. And I'm fairly well known, so why would they bother? But they're bothering. I really think they're bothering, Bob. I was on chat.
This time this was my fault. I'll have to say
that. You know, but here's a funny thing. As soon as the call ended the show, whatever, my wife comes up the stairs and says, hey, somebody just called and didn't leave them. They left a message without a name, and we don't have caller ID because we're broke and we're trying to save money. And they said, I guess the show's over. Do you want to call me? So I went down while I was waiting to find out how we were going to solve this. And luckily, it's a guy with a distinctive voice, Kelly Mordecai, who was just on the show with us. And I knew it was Kelly. So I come back upstairs and into my office, which is cooling down nicely, and because I'm up in the mountains, it gets cold at night. And so I direct message him on Facebook, and then a message appears that looks like it's from him referencing a newspaper article from about a month and a half ago about a political candidate that I know who won on a write-in vote, which we've talked about Scott Wagner before. And I responded to it, and his response was that message for me or somebody else? And then I looked, and the thing I had looked at was gone. I really think seriously, Bob, I know this may have been your error. I think that this is a tactic that has been reported frequently, not just on Facebook, but on other social media, where and it's been documented with Charlie Strange, the father of Michael Strange, this leader of SEAL Team 6, in an NSA lawsuit that he actually won in federal court against the NSA, that the powers that be who have all this technical know-how, instead of going after terrorists, they go after troublemakers. I mean, I hope they're going after terrorists, but we know they're going after troublemakers like me. And they throw a glitch in, and they see if they can confuse everybody, and they try and make it so that we're disheartened because we can't communicate. And I'm laughing my butt off. This is hilarious. This is the best they can do? I say bring it on. You guys are just pathetic. I'm telling you this out there. It's a pathetic attempt. And the one thing they don't realize, the bosses of the workers who are actually doing this, I know workers, and government workers are no different from any other workers. I'm using the fact that they're paying attention to the stuff that me and my friends are doing to convert their workers. Bosses, President Obama, whoever the heck is head of Homeland Security lately, Holder, the rest of you guys, I have to tell you something. You can't trust your own subordinates. Your cronies and your lackeys are not loyal to you. No, they're not, because they're listening to us and we make more sense. And quite frankly, when they think things out logically and they think, which side of the bread is the butter on? And that's what everybody does. Look, I try to be altruistic, and I like to be a good guy, and I like to help. Honestly, my bottom line is I like peace and quiet, and I like not to be bothered. The only way I can achieve that is by giving up my peace and quiet and being bothered and messing with the powers that be to try and restore liberty, because if we do this, then we all get to have peace and quiet and not be bothered in whatever form that takes for us. So that's why I'm doing it, because it benefits me and my family. And yes, I like to think, and maybe I've done this more than one time in my life, that I would put myself on the line with no benefit for me just because it's the right thing to do. And there are people who do that. And the people at D-Day, and that was just now, yesterday, December 6, 1944, they put themselves on the line. Quite a few people have done that. But a lot of people think, bottom line, which side of the bread has the butter on? Well, they look at the bosses and realize that the bosses will screw with somebody as innocent and decent as they do, then they screw with anybody, so they don't trust their bosses. And then they look at people like me and like Robert and like Kelly, like all those friends of mine, hundreds and hundreds, thousands of friends out there, and they're not just Facebook or Twitter friends. I mean, these are real people I actually know. And they're really nice people who aren't any threat to them, who actually are fun and friendly and want to help them. So, you know what? That's the choice they're making. So bring it on, NSA. Come on. Why don't you screw things up a little bit more and show us just how powerful you are? Ooh, we're scared. And I will mention this. There was an actual expose recently that involved – I don't have the details. It's somewhere on book somewhere. I saw it, and I vetted it. And Harriet probably knows it.
I do want to continue with that. I do.
Yeah.
But speaking of Kelly, we do have Kelly back on the line.
Oh, good.
As well as Mark. So I want to go ahead and – bring them back in, and then we'll
all
continue
right
with you, and then we'll move forward. So welcome.
Well, I was just
Kelly
trying to kill some time here.
Mark?
I was just trying to
fill in. I appreciate it. We always appreciate everything you give us here, Dan. And so I just want to welcome back you, Kelly, and you, Mark. Thank you very much for calling back to the show, which is the continuation of Friday night's June 6th show. I know it's kind of a generic title that I put there, but I only had literally 15 minutes to try to get the logistics of the show put together so we could continue with our conversation. And so that's why we have such a generic title for this part of this new show, I guess, or the continuation of Friday. So go ahead, guys.
Well, thank you. You know, Dan, it's kind of interesting, you know, call me your friend and I don't know whether or not we are friends, but it sure is fun to pretend.
Well, Kelly, my definition of we've never met personally. We've never met personally because you're 3,000 plus miles away. What I know about you tells me that you're somebody who's worth knowing. What I know about you tells me that you're somebody who is honest and somebody who I can trust. What I know about you is that you are motivated for the very same reasons that I'm motivated, so that you can pursue your own happiness, which is not identical to mine. And to me, that puts you in the realm of friend. Now, I can't consider us close friends because we haven't met, we haven't broken bread together, we haven't been involved in an intimate campaign like some of the people I am involved with here on this coast, in this state, who I can definitely call friends because, you know, when we meet, it's a warm handshake and often a hug. We know the names of each other's kids and pets. Sometimes we've been over each other's houses. We've sweated together. We've worked together. We've suffered together. Yeah, those are definitely friends. And I personally like to think that you would be my friend as well. But you don't have to be. This is a free country,
at least for a little while. I certainly think that way. You know, I guess you're thinking I'm a good guy, and I can only say.
You are.
I got him fooled.
But we also have,
no, you know what?
Definitely, it would definitely be great if one day we could get, you know, all the different folks here who's, you know, made such a great contribution to the show. You know, one day we can all, you know, meet at one time or maybe even separately. I did get the opportunity, and she's not on the line tonight, but I did get an opportunity to meet Cindy Todd one time, and my wife and I were able to have lunch with her, and that was great. And hopefully, at some point, I'm hoping to be down in Florida again sometime in the not-too-distant future, and I know our other caller on the line is Mark Prasic. I know you're down there in Florida, so hopefully we'll be able to connect at some point when I'm down there. I'm actually hoping to be down there next month. We'll just have to see, because my brother lives down there, and he's invited us down. We'll just have to see if we can get down there from Ohio. But hopefully we'll be able to do that, Mark. But I want to welcome you back on the show, too. Thank you very much for coming back on.
Well, I thought it was rather clever that you did what you did, and I commend you on that. But I would want to comment, you know, keep in mind that friends come and go, but enemies accumulate.
That's not in law.
That's a good point.
So we have more.
You know,
I
want to add one thing real quick. Well, I want to add one thing real quick, which is most all of my friends, one way or another, even the really, really peaceful pacifist ones, are awfully dangerous in one way or another. If you think about it, and I'm not saying that you guys are terrorists, although you are. Kelly, Kelly, you've got a dangerous mind. You are wickedly precise and insightful, and you cut right to the core of things. And Mark, you have created a dangerous weapon with Patriot Journalist Network. And Robert, you're just a rabble rouser who just keeps on inciting crowds and bringing all these great people together, and just across all these lines, these libertarians who thought they had nothing in common with the Greens, who had nothing in common with the militia, who had nothing in common with the Republicans, who had nothing in common with the anti-common core, all of a sudden they're listening to the show and going, my God, we have everything in common. So, yeah, we're pretty darn dangerous. And I will say, you know, just for the NSA folks out there, nobody else, I'm dangerous, and I mean dangerous. So anybody threatens any one of you, they're going to have to deal with me, and I don't mess around. And this is not idle boasting. I have a history, and I'm a peaceful guy. I don't like violence, but I stop violence, and I've done it before, and I'm not a stranger to it. So if you are thinking about messing with any one of us, you better make it good.
I always
it's good to have you at our shoulders there, Dan. Shoulder to shoulder. It's good to have you there.
You got your six, buddy.
Thank you. Go ahead, Kelly. You're going to say something?
I'm kind of running out of words. How many people do we got on with us so far?
Well, it's just us. It's just us four. As I said, it's kind of an impromptu, and then the folks who were on the line where, you know, because I didn't put out a link or anything of that nature. It was just in my rush to be able to get us back on to continue the conversation. I wasn't able to do much promoting, because I only had literally had about 13 minutes to try to get it together, you know, to be able to get it at 12:30, because they, the way it's set up, the time, it's on 30-minute increments. So if I couldn't get it set up by 12:30, it would end up being 1 o'clock, and I figured by that time it'd probably be too late. So.
Oh, I see. I got a terrible cough. Sorry about that. I'm coughing in your ear. I'm glad I can't spit in your ear.
Well, I appreciate that. That's good.
Yeah.
But also, Mark and the other folks, just to let you know real quick, is that if there are any more links you'd like us to share on the Bard's Logic Political Talk Facebook page, the chat is also open. So if you'd like to put something in chat, a link in chat, I can put it on the site as well. So go ahead, Kelly.
Okay.
I just wanted to tell Mark about that.
Well, one of the things, you know, while I was, I don't know why, but I started looking at Patrick Henry. I was doing some research for a paper, a writing Minjay had yesterday. I was trying to confirm a fact or not, but Patrick Patrick Henry's speech where he ends, "Give me liberty or give me death." I cannot believe the eloquence. And it said he gave it without any notes. And obviously he didn't have a teleprompter. But it's stunning. I've read this before. And it was just before the vote to take up arms in Virginia or to help the militia. And it was in 75. And this happened after Lexington and Concord had already occurred. And I just, how in the world does a person get so phenomenally eloquent like this? It's stunning. But he sure had it in the way he spoke. And if I study this stuff more, maybe I'll get a one-tenth of the way there. So it's just kind of cool.
Kelly, I read that piece that you're talking about, the one you wrote, and that deserves a wider audience. That's folks, Kelly is a scholar, as he says, and very good technical writer, and this piece goes beyond technical writing. It's not only with proper references and really just excellent quotes chosen appropriately, put in the right place, but it really, it has a feeling to it that just really gets you. And Kelly, if you put that on Facebook or any of the other sites, I really want to see more people read that, because if it got me, and I'm really in a kind of emotionally, blubbery kind of fella, I cry every time I see Casablanca and stuff, it would probably have that effect on a lot of other people too, and it's really, really good.
Did it kind of suck you in and you keep going?
Yeah, and you're definitely welcome to, read that on the show too, of course, Kelly.
Oh, well, I could try. I could certainly try. Well, I'm kind of thinking, I'm just kind of gauging the audience right now. I don't know, Robert, have you read it yet?
I've had the opportunity to, look through it, but, I haven't had a chance to really, read it line by line, because I believe I can't recall when you gave it to me. I think it was last night, but unfortunately I haven't had the time to, read it line by line.
Oh, okay. Well, the reason why I ask is because I don't want to be redundant. Are you okay, Dan? There's four of us right now, but
yeah.
Are you okay, Dan, with me reading it?
No, Robert's show, and he asked you to. So,
okay, there's only four of us. I'm being redundant to some person here. So,
question I have, Kelly, is it's a little bit long for reading. So I'm not sure, just in terms of effectiveness, if it might be better for you to choose excerpts to read rather than to read the whole thing. And that's what we call in the business, we call that a tease, where you give them enough to make them want more.
Oh, good point. Strategically, if you read the whole thing, they would have no reason to go read it themselves. We do this with Scripture. I'll say, the Bible says this in, Romans 8:38. What does it say? We'll go look it up.
Plus, when they read it, when they actually have it and read it, it becomes theirs in a way different from when they hear you say it. And when they hear you say it, the only way they can, if they have a perfect memory and can just recite it by rote, versus if they have the tease and they like it, and then they've got an actual link which share and more people get to read it.
Wow.
Okay.
I think I'll be made here that I try to make with activists. Robert, I won't use any names, but you'll know who I'm talking about. But so many people, because we now have access to Facebook and Twitter, they have a means to put a message out. And I think in their zeal to get their message heard, they literally ram it down people's throats. And it, unfortunately, it reminds me of, a bar of soap on the bottom of the bathtub that you dropped. The more you try to get it, it just, and you spook people away. You
got
to
be careful when you
water.
Bend over to pick up that soap, too.
Well, we're not in jail here, okay? We're not.
Not yet.
And But
well, you know what?
I'm
going to go ahead and try that, what you just mentioned.
Picking up a bar of soap?
No. I'm going to try to read.
Dark.
Yeah. I'm going to try to read excerpts of this. To kind of skim through quickly, I guess. So the title is called 1776, Who Should Get the Honor for the Founding? And as we might know, Napoleon Bonaparte said, an army marches on its stomach. So whom should be honored with the founding of the States United? Should be Thomas Jefferson, wrote the Declaration of Independence. Life, Liberty, and Pursuit of Happiness, he wrote. But did you know, these were sent to many of the other British colonies, and they started their own revolution, and Great Britain had to sue for peace because they could not afford all these wars. So a great impact, but should Thomas Jefferson be honored alone for the founding? How about George Washington, a fledgling army, got defeated many times. He kept it alive. Great man. Should we honor him alone for the founding? How about Thomas Paine, give me liberty or give me death? Great motivation, but should we honor him alone? How about the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence? Hancock, Rutledge, Samuel Adams, et cetera, et cetera. They boldly declared their own death sentence, and they suffered much during the war. Should we honor these alone? How about Benjamin Franklin, negotiating with the French? Key helps was a fund and a Navy armada to help win the Great Battle of Yorktown in 1781. Should he be honored alone? How about the militia? Many thousands of men were involved, and they gave their lives, some estimates up to 25,000. Should we honor these alone? Or should it be maybe some of the states that came out with state constitutions prior to July 4th of 1776? Should we honor these states alone? No, I say, and again, no to all the above. Well, then who should it be? Who should we honor for the founding of our states united? It was the people of 1776, men, women, families who suffered the tyranny under King George. They knew full well they were fighting the greatest army the world had ever seen. They knew things would have to get worse before they get better. They still chose to make such painful sacrifices, and it got much worse and bloody for many over the next 7 years until 1783. When King George acknowledged in the Treaty of Peace that these 13 colonies are now acknowledged as states, even though they became states in 76 by declaration. But it wasn't easy for the people. For the Revolutionary War effort, the people made the choice to provide provisions to the militia and the army, food, clothing, guns, bullets, horses, wagons, enough for the revolutionaries to win. It was sacrifice. The further sacrifice of submitting to and living in fear, fear of being arrested and hung by the British for providing for the patriots. The people of 1776 were shopkeepers, merchants, farmers, blacksmiths, just everyday people like you and me, possibly bearing the greatest sacrifice for mothers. Mothers who would lose homes, sons, and husbands. What pain to lose a loved one when, at the time, sacrifice and outcome may have been in vain. It was a people that elected their representatives to the colonial legislatures. From there, these people elected other people to send to the Continental Congress to eventually write the Declaration of Independence. It was a people that inspired each other in this great task to overthrow the tyranny that the representatives detailed in the Declaration of Independence. It was people of the people writing that the King of England was a tyrant, that he has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. Such a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Of course, in retaliation, King George would have wished to release the fires of hell upon the colonials, now state citizens, and he did. It was we the people who found the strength to inspire, approve, or disapprove leaders. We the people, sacrificing provisions, time, prayer, and some in battle, the last full measure of devotion. Estimates of mortality are as high as 25,000. Great individuals mentioned above go down the annals of history for providing inspiration, leadership, and key battlefield experience, but yet it was the people that elected the representatives to the colonial legislature prior to July 4th, 1776, it was the people that authorized and supported such grace and provided war provisions. It was the people that won the independence for 13 states. When the preamble to the Constitution was penned, it started with, "We, the people." The people and their experience of tyranny combined with prayer developed a charter that, when followed, made this union of states great. The people knew from the British Magna Carta of 1215 that it was a great idea to place the law above the king. Now the law would be above all government agents. The charter we, the people, penned is called the Constitution, a treaty between the independent states for a formal union of sovereign states. Shortly thereafter came the Bill of Rights. This came out of the spirit of 1776, reflective of the people of 1776. The founders shall now be precisely named and honored. We, the people of 1776. Then I go into We, the People of 2014. We are met with challenges. The left, we've got socialism. On the right, we have corporatism, who try to sneak in their agendas through legislation on paper when no one's watching. But it is up to us to continue what they have done. On July 4th, I cannot dishonor what we the people of 1776 did, but just having watermelon and watching fireworks this 4th. This 4th, I will tell stories of the sacrifices of we the people to attract others to learn about this great spirit of 76. I will not cower to social science nor political correctness at a picnic table, nor will I be rude. I shall vocally honor the great sacrifices of we the people of 1776. The battle of we the people continues. May it continue with eloquence and grace, staying another bloody revolution.
That's just so that moves me. And folks, there's more where that came from. So Kelly, post that, because you know what? That might be the basis of a new book for you. I mean, that's good.
Well, thank
very
you.
Well written. It sounded more of a story than, you know, than just reading. I mean, you could see the pictures of those things. At least I did, you know, of the people back then and what they were going through and what they did. So it was very story-like, the way you read it.
It makes you realize not only what they had to do to achieve what they required, their freedom, but it makes you identify with those people and realize that we're the same, that this is going to be required of us, that sitting back and sitting on the sidelines and just letting others do the dirty work for you, the hard lifting, the selfless sacrifice, ain't going to cut it. It ain't going to cut it, folks. I'm sorry. It's just not. If you're sitting back and you're doing nothing, unless you're, you know, completely disabled, and I mean not government officially disabled, but really disabled,
yeah,
or you've got that much on your plate that you really can't, and there are people like that. There are, and,
right,
and I'm not mad at you, and I'm not going to accuse you of anything. Some people just can't cope more than what they've got already. But if you've got anything left to give and you're not, you're part of the problem. You're actually causing this. You're allowing this. And it's making me very upset, because you're going to suffer, and so is my family. I'm doing what I can. I don't ask you to do what I'm doing. I don't ask you to do it to the extent I'm doing. I don't ask you to do any particular thing, but pick something, for God's sakes, and start doing it.
One of the best ways we can do is to be a little bit vocal here and there. Of course, not rude or pushy, but be vocal in the sense of this, and pretty soon we start having connections. And then, you know, I got friends that all they want to just talk about politics. I had a bunch of them, and I helped them call the Jefferson Party meeting, and we had like 16 mm-hmm. people show up, and we're trying to start a new party here or something. But connecting people with expressing a view here, a view there, and then as I avoid the eighth deadly sin, which Mark, do you know what the eighth deadly sin is?
I'm still working on the first seven.
Power. The will to power. And that's actually number one.
Yeah, number one is pride, you know, and there's adultery and murder and gluttony and all this stuff. But there's that's the seventh. The eighth one is hogging the microphone. So I shut up when I get people heart, motivated, I'll just listen and listen and listen, and they'll tell me new stuff, and there's a bond created. It's phenomenal.
This is a hint that it's hard for me to do, and I've made it a conscious point to do this. Whenever there's a discussion, I like to give somebody else the last word. No matter what it is, just let them go. Go ahead, let them. It doesn't matter. It's not about what I've got to say. It's about what's being said. And quite frankly, if what they're saying is valid, where's the harm? That pride thing. We all have it. We all want to be right. Just drop it, buddy. All of you. Everybody out there, just forget about that part of it. Forget about being right. Forget about being a big deal. Forget. And if you get any positions, whether you're if you're in a group and you're elected to some sort of an office, you're a secretary, a treasurer, a president, a vice president, whatever, you know what? It doesn't make you any better. It just means that you've got a job to do, which is a responsibility, a very serious responsibility. And somebody else can do your job too. In fact, it's a good idea whenever you get a position of responsibility to start immediately planning an exit strategy. To say, first of all, what are the dangers here to me, to my conscience, to my sense of integrity, and how am I going to cope with that? And then how do I get out of this? It's not for life. You don't deserve it. If you're elected to something, if somebody makes you, a president or just follows you, just listens to you, guess what? Your job is to bring them up to the point where they can take your job and do it just as well or better, so you can stop doing the job and do something else. That's your job.
And let's definitely not break the eighth deadliest sin. Let's go ahead and bring you in, Mark.
Well, there's been much talked about, but one of the principles, I draw a lot of the guidance in my own journey from experience playing football and being coached and then later being a coach. But there's a concept in team play that we call depth. And, you know, you may be a great leader, and that's good, but the fact is you're mortal. You won't be there forever. And I think that something we need to keep in mind is we will be remembered after we're gone. So how are we going to be remembered? Well, I think we need to plan our legacy into our strategy. If you achieve a position of notoriety and leadership, first of all, it shouldn't be because you sought it, okay? It really should be a side effect of your labor, of your dedication to a cause. That will naturally, as they say, cream rises. Well, you know, poopy floats too, but, you know, parenthetically, you will. But if you do not cultivate, okay, and of course, you know, that notoriety feels good. It's very affirming. We all want that, and it's a legitimate need. But an illegitimate means of fulfilling it is to feed on that and let it get to you. So one of the duties we have is to create depth, to delegate to others, give them a chance, let them become leaders, because you will be replaced at some point. If for no other reason, you're mortal.
You know, when there was a triumph in ancient Rome, when there was a great victory of the legions, they permitted the army to enter Rome, which was illegal. You could not bring an army into Rome. And the leader of the army, the consul or the praetor or the general, would march in front of his legions follow his legions, rather. And the first thing that came in the parade was all the booty. I mean, it was to show the people of Rome, hey, look, you're taken care of. Look at all the gold and great things and art that we just stole. And then would be the captives, you know, the leaders of the other side, now in chains, wretched, you know, humbled by the power of Rome. And then your legions, all cleaned up, shields polished, everything new, brand new equipment, not the field stuff that they'd been living in for months or years. And they'd be marching, and it was a show of power that was so awesome. And there you'd be riding with your face painted red, like the god Mars, then you are the very embodiment of Roman virtue of conquering the other just because you want it and you're strong. And they had one smart thing in that whole parade of pride and just really disgusting power, which was a slave who rode in the chariot with the conquering general. And his job was to sit at the general's side and constantly repeat in the general's ear, "You're mortal. You're going to die," to remind him that he's not a god. You know, a lot of people think in this modern society that they are equivalent to God, that they have the power to do anything they want, and it doesn't matter, and there's no consequences. They can do what they want to do, and it's fine. Well, guess what? It's not necessarily that way. Whatever you do, there are consequences, and not just in your own life. If you're living in the middle of the woods and you're doing your own thing, that's one thing. But if you have relationships, if you work at a job, if you have a family, if you have friends, every single action that you take is going to have a consequence on their lives, and it's going to be either positive or negative. So if you're doing things that actually bolster your compatriots in life, that help them in some way, that bring them up and give them some inspiration and maybe some material support, you know, that teaches them something, then good for you, and, you know, 100%, I'll help you. And if you're doing stuff that brings them down, what's wrong with you? You think you're God? You think you have that right? Maybe you do have that right. I'm not sure if that the Constitution doesn't really forbid that, but morally, you really don't. And,
you know,
it's not acceptable.
You know, we were talking about God, and, well, the world would have been in a better place if Bill Murray just would have answered yes to the question posed to him.
What question?
Okay, you lost.
Are you a god? And he said no. Then die!
Oh, we're talking about Ghostbusters. You know, I know this is just something that would interest you gentlemen and interest the audience. You know, it's a theological interest to me, maybe not as much of a faith interest. There's something Mark, you talk about a lot about the kind of battle we're having. If you like, maybe I'll open it up if you want to talk a little bit about that, since we're kind of bringing this to the issue. Is you say that something like it's a spiritual battle that we're having?
Yeah, my position is, and obviously, you know, I'm deeply interested in politics, but it is my contention that our problems are not political, they're not educational, they're not judicial, they're not social, they're not educational. In fact, our problems are spiritual, and any solution must therefore also be spiritual. Because at the core, politics is an attempt, policy is an attempt to mold the culture into a functional and acceptable way of sustaining itself. And in my opinion, the extent of the problems we have are in direct proportion to the degree to which we have deviated from the plan that was laid out by God. God knows what he's doing. That's why he's God. We're not God, but we decide we can do things better, you know, and then we find ourselves with difficulty. So, and that's why I say we need to win the cultural war. You cannot, you've heard it said, you can't legislate morality. Well, folks, I hate to tell you, you can't legislate conservatism either. Okay? People say, boy, I wish we could get Nancy Pelosi out of there. Well, yeah, I agree with that, but here's what they're not thinking about. Nancy Pelosi is a product of the culture of the district she's from. So if she goes away, guess what? There'll be one just like her. So it's a cultural battle and ultimately a spiritual battle. And if we don't, you know, we can have logic on our side and we can mobilize this and use all this strategy and all that, but if we don't win the hearts and minds of the people, It will be in vain. It'll be temporary. You cannot impose your will on somebody until they make it their will. Change comes from the inside out, and many times in the political arena, we're trying to impose our will from the outside in.
You're absolutely correct, and you know, it resonates with me. All I'm working with are telling me small groups on every level, finding other people who are open because they know stuff is wrong, educating them, giving them a task, bringing them in, developing them as leaders who then branch off or add to the group, and on a grassroots level, from the bottom up, from we the people, we are changing things, and it's a race right now as to whether we're going to be able to have enough people wake and enough people decide to take action together in unity, or whether in charge are going to be able to foster a culture of control on us to accept either tacitly or by force. And quite frankly, I don't think they've got a shot. I really don't. That doesn't mean I'm going to take it easy or give up or just say, hey, it's fine. It'll take care of itself. We're going to win. Well, we are going to win. See, the difference is in motivation. You ask any criminal what they're most afraid of, violent criminals, and they're not that afraid of the cops because they're going to get arrested, and they're comfortable with jail, and they know how the system works, and it's part of the cost of doing business. They'll get away with it 10, 20, 30 times before they get arrested at all. And they might even get off, and plus, jail's great, can never earn a new trade. So they're not afraid of cops. They are kind of afraid of, like, a dog, a little barking dog that won't shut up, that wakes everybody up, or a big dog that might bite them. But, you know, some dogs can be intimidated, and you can certainly give them a piece of poisoned meat or just shoot them, and then no more dog. But what they're most afraid of, these really violent ones, is an armed homeowner, somebody who's in their home, which is their home property. They have, that's their turf, who has a family there, who has the means to protect themselves and will do what it takes to protect themselves and their wives or their husbands or their children or their parents. And they know that in terms of motivation, they're breaking into a house, they're invading a home because they want something. But the person who's fighting back needs something. They need to live. They need to save their friends and family. Well, people in power, they want this power. They don't really need it. They could be quite happy with less power. They could go off and have a little bit of corruption here and there. It'll work for them. They can start rebuilding their corrupt networks and trying to take us over. They're going to do it anyway. I mean, they're going to keep trying. But they're fighting against people who are starting to realize that it's not a question of I want my freedom. It's a question of I need my freedom. And the reason I need it is because I can't live as a slave. I can't sentence my own family to slavery. I can't tell my children and grandchildren that they are going to now be property of somebody else because I was too lazy, too weak, too confused, too busy, too distracted, too scared, too whatever it is to actually get up on my hind legs and do something. And folks, you know the thing is, you got people who are leaders, and you'll notice that nobody's getting sent to a concentration camp at this point. No FEMA camps are open. You'll notice that big mouths like me who go around and consort with, you know, not just the really conservative staid types like Heritage Foundation and Americans for Prosperity and, you know, the right-to-work groups and the pro-life groups, but also the militia and Anonymous. I mean, these are my friends, too, and they're pretty out there. In some people's eyes, I think they're just regular folks who have a different point of view. And you'll notice that I'm still talking on the air. They haven't locked me up. They haven't shot me. They haven't tried any crap. They're not about to. If they do, they'll pay a price. And that says, even if something happens to me, you'll all know about it. And it's going to strengthen your resolve. And I'm not looking to be a martyr, and none of us are. Quite frankly, if we can just hold together, I don't think any of us have to be. Because if they, and this is just a small figure, those of you who are scared, I'll remind you once again, if you take every single armed federal agent in the entire world that works for the U.S. government, and you add in the armed forces, all the Navy, the Coast Guard, the Air Force, the Army and the Marines, and all the special forces, now you add every single police officer. And now you add the Department of Agriculture SWAT team and the Department of Education helicopter patrol and the rocket team from the Bureau of Fisheries, and add them all up and then compare them just to the number of armed deer who are mostly volunteer firefighters and just decent, hardworking guys and gals. Just in the state of Pennsylvania, we outnumber them, the state of Pennsylvania. Now, I'm not suggesting that we're going to go to war. What I'm telling you is that there's more of us than there are of them, and we're just as powerful as they are. They're just people. And that if we're united, we surround them.
And that's what they're afraid of. That's why they keep on trying to distract us and pit us against each other so that we're too busy attacking each other instead of focusing where the real enemy is.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Well, if you ever attend a Red Meat live event, we always close with a video that
oh, I love that video.
Has become our closing anthem. And it's really just a compilation of scenes from the movie Gladiator. And there's a couple of things that come to mind as you were reciting all that. Is they're in the arena, and of course they're there to be killed. I mean, and he speaks out to a bunch of slaves, and says, "Whatever comes out that gate, we stand a better chance of survival if we'll work together." And of course it goes on, and they actually wound up defeating the people, blah, 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 great thing. But sometimes there's just many moments of inspiration in that movie that I think we can all take home. But at the end of the day, you can outnumber somebody. I'll take on an enemy that outnumbers me, provided that I can keep that enemy confused and isolated. But if they get together, I lose. It's unity and it's teamwork. It's not just the sheer amount of effort that you make. For example, World War II, you've heard of the Banzai Run. Well, I'm sure that they were very passionate, but they were foolish. Kamikaze tactics, they were very passionate, but it's an act of desperation. When you act as a team, all doing the same thing, success is almost guaranteed. The sun is constantly shining on half of the earth, yet the sun starts no fire. But if you take a simple magnifying glass and focus the energy of the sun in just that little 4-inch circle, you can light a forest fire. So we need to focus and we need to work together.
Right. Certainly.
Well,
that's
true.
If you go to
Mark
one of the Red Meat events, you'll be able to see that video.
Yeah, Mark is talking about a force multiplier, and I've used that term a number of times, so let me just try and use a couple of analogies. We fought in Vietnam, we fought in Afghanistan with overwhelming technology and material support. I mean, we had more stuff and better stuff than anybody else, and yet we didn't win in Vietnam, and it was political. And it was not just political on the sense of our leaders failing. It was political in the sense of their leaders unifying and working with what they had. A force multiplier is something that gives you more power than you would normally have. For instance, if there's a mob of people trying to attack your store, in some kind of a riot situation, and they want to loot it, if you have a pistol in your hand, just a little 5-shot pistol, you have a force multiplier. You're no longer one person with the strength of your arms and legs against 50 people with the strength of their arms and legs. You're going to lose. You now have the power to simply pull a trigger to squeeze your finger down and put a lead slug at high speed in any one of them. And they're all thinking it's going to be them. So if you're showing it, is going to stop about 30 of those 50 instantly. And the 20 who are left, if you say something with that and get their attention, five of them are going to go, whoa, what am I doing? You got 15 left. You fire one shot in the air, and that noise is going to remind 10 of them that, oh, my goodness, you know, that's for real. So you got five left. And you simply say, the first one that comes in gets it. The first one. And those five are now thinking, do I really want to be the one who makes sure that the other four or however many you might not shoot are going to get something? Or maybe I want to go someplace else. And you're done. You don't have to worry about it. You never shot anybody. That's a force multiplier. Now, force multipliers are not just physical. What Mark has invented with his Patriot Journalist Network is a method where if you've got a message to get out, you can actually get this message out far more than you could do on your own. If you were to try and replicate what he's able to do, what he's created for you by doing it yourself, you would spend hours and hours and hours doing nothing but rote, repetitive work, typing, entering, trying to get the right link, trying to get to the right page, typing, entering over and over and over again, and you would get that result, but not as quickly. Whereas with the tools he's provided, as he said, a small group of people who are dedicated and on the same message, who have decided this is something that we want to share with as many people as possible, can share it with an extraordinary large number of people. Twitter itself, just like Facebook and all these other social medias, is another force multiplier. When I send out a tweet, it goes out to, I don't know what I'm up to, 3,000-something people who follow me. Great. But the reach is far greater because of those people, a lot of them aren't going to see it at that moment, but Mark's got it repeating, so they're going to see it at some point. And at some point, some of those people actually read it. And when they read it, if they see value in the message that I'm putting out there, and I sure hope they do, and they seem to, then what they're going to do is they're going to simply go, oh, that's really good, retweet. Now all of a sudden they're sending it to their 500 or 5,000 or 10,000 followers that they've got. And some of them are going to see it and retweet it. The thing that makes me feel great is not that the same people who I already know like what I write and agree with it are reading it again. I mean, how many times do you want to read something, even if it's really good? A couple of times will do it at the most. But the fact that I keep seeing people I've never heard of that I don't know saying, well, that was really great, and responding to me or retweeting it to their 50 or 500 or 5,000 followers. And some of those people decide that this is good enough stuff. I'm going to follow this guy because he's giving me good information. I do the same with them. If they're providing me with good information, something more than just, you know, Grumpy Cat. I like Grumpy Cat. Come on. Who doesn't like Grumpy Cat? But good information that's helpful in some way that resonates with me, I make it a point to try and share it with them. When somebody has a comment on one of my stories and it's something I hadn't considered or that's a really interesting viewpoint or something that's valid, that, wow, I think people should know that. I just hit the button and it goes out, 3,000 people. And with Mark's system, you get way more than that.
Well, there's a concept that you alluded to earlier with your you know, handgun illustration. I use a different one, but I think they're both worth, you know, have merit. Is, you know, we may have experienced at one time or another our car gets stuck, and you know, a friend comes along and he gets behind your car and pushes and sweats and heaves and but it doesn't work. So a few minutes later, another person comes by and tries to help and repeats the same thing. And over the hours, five different people come by and exert a lot of effort to hell. But if any two or three of them were to do the same thing at the same time, the car would quite easily come out of the ditch. So a lot of times it isn't how hard you work, it's the teamwork. It's the synergistic effect whereby the total becomes greater than the sum of the parts.
It's also leverage.
It's
also leverage.
Well, there's leverage. Well, that's a force multiplier. But
well, that's what you provided. Mark, your system is like having a winch when your car is stuck that you can attach to your bumper or to your trailer hitch and loop it around a tree or something that's solid and immobile, so you get that force multiplier of a bend in the wire that doubles your pulling force. And you can sit there with a come along, just a simple little winch, and just pull and ratchet and pull and ratchet,
ratchet
and pull and ratchet. And just the arm motion of you standing there will move 3,000 pounds of stuck car.
Oh, it's amazing what a small group. And I'm very sincere when I said earlier, there is enough power and there is enough passion within the sound of our voice to seriously impact the culture. There really is. But as long as we stay isolated, I mean, we can sit here and talk on Blog Talk Radio amongst ourselves all we want to, but we've got to impact the greater culture out there. And it's not going to be done by ramming it down their throat. It's not going to be done by overwhelming them with messaging. I really think the current system whereby, I hate to say it, but, you dump millions of dollars into an election campaign, the guy will win. And that's really what we're up against, is the manipulation of the culture by external forces. Well, we have something now that we can counter that doesn't cost millions of dollars. We have social media. We have electronic, we have the internet. So we can use that as a networking tool to be a force multiplier. It does not take, the fact is there's more of us than there are of them. Okay? But we're not organized, we're not working together, and we're not mobilized. So that's part of the strategy of Patriot Journalist Network, is to provide, is it the perfect framework? Well, no. Nothing is. But provide a framework of unity to focus a message and then leverage that to a wider audience. And what we're doing right now as we speak with the Bergdahl situation, we're able to amplify the voice of representatives who will come out and speak out against it. And quite frankly, it's working more and more and more. And Robert and I, way back when, I mean, we don't agree, can we get our party back? I say yes. He says no. I want many Roberts who have given up on the GOP. And now that we're a little bit in after hours, I'm going to share a story with you that it breaks my heart, but it's something I think you all should know. In our previous campaign on Bring Back Our Marine, I offered any elected official, Republican or Democrat, to have our entire team retweet them. Now, I took a chance on that because would that have happened, I'm sure there would have been some backlash from people. Why are we retweeting a liberal Democrat? Well, I could defend it, but I put myself at risk when I offered that. Well, in the process of following up with these people, I wound up calling a liberal Democrat office in southern Georgia, Congressman Hayden Johnson's office. Now, I have spent weeks calling U.S. congressional offices, and it's really not easy, guys. If I didn't have the team standing behind me, they wouldn't give me the time of day. But even with the team behind me, it is very difficult to get to the press secretary, who actually, by the way, has their fingers on the buttons of the computer that post the Facebook and Twitter messages, not the elected official, by the way.
Right.
When I called Congressman Johnson's office, the person who answered the phone said, "Well, Mr. Prasik, we thank you so much for calling. The person you need to speak to is Andy," and I forget his last name, okay? I'll never get that on a Republican's office. They don't want you to know the name of the press secretary, because if you know the name, you know their email address. Okay, if you kind of get inside the system. And then the person that answered the phone said, and I'm sorry, but he is not in that office right now, but he is working in our such-and-such office, and I'm going to give you the number to that office, and I'll give you his direct number. If you're unable to contact him, would you please call me back so I can help you make further arrangements to make sure that you get a hold of him? Folks, the Democrats know how to be hospitable. They knew who I was. They knew who I represented. They knew, but they were friendly. They were warm. I've never been treated that well by a Republican office, never.
Wow, that is a sad state. But, you know,
okay.
They've been doing, you point out, they've been doing this for a long time, and that's why they're much more successful in getting their message out than the Republicans are.
They're kicking our butts, and I share with these congressional offices, listen, I'm collaborating with people who are kind of put up with you guys, okay? And I'm trying to urge them to let's work together on something, but I want to help you, but you know what? I need help too, because there's some really pissed off people out there. And if you can look at the congressional approval ratings, I think it bears me out. But they're paranoid. It's just a sad state of affairs. It's grieving me deeply that the people I'm trying to help treat me with suspicion, give me runaround, brush me aside.
Mm-hmm.
I have to fight with bloody fingers and white knuckles holding on to the GOP saying, guys, we need to make a go of this.
Let me make a suggestion, if you don't mind. I deal with a very similar kind of experience. There are there who have never been involved in politics, and they think I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. And maybe, I don't know about sliced bread, but okay, I'm helpful to them. And I deal with people who are really pushing the limits, and they're either single-issue or multi-issue patriots who are activists, and they're grateful to have another person helping them. So they promote my stuff, I promote their stuff, we cross-pollinate, we try and help each other's events and each other's actions and each other's campaigns. And then there are the people who have already got established credentials and established organizations. Some are politicians, and some are members or directors of, I won't mention any names or groups right now, because this is part of the point of what I'm trying to make here, of groups you'd recognize and you probably get emails from and that I've worked with and I've done things for and they've done things with me, and I can't seem to break through to get a really good cooperative venture going on anything. There, it's always, we'll get back to you, and a lot of ignoring. Oh, we've got this great project, and, the details just never seem to flesh out. And it was bothering me a bit, partly for selfish reasons, because I thought, boy, this is a lack of respect. And I thought, what did I keep telling everybody and telling myself? It's not about me, so I don't care if they respect me. Well, what's bothering me after that is still that it's not very efficient to not be working together. And I thought, well, what's the best way for me to get these people to work with me? And I realized that it's going to take a number of things. First of all, it's going to take forbearance on my part and understanding. Understanding of the fact that they work very hard to get where they got, and they feel like they've got something to lose, and they're not willing to take an extreme risk of associating with me in any really, really close fashion at this point, because If I'm not a proven quantity to them, and in some way something happens with me or with one of the groups I'm associated with, they could end up tarred with the same brush. So I've got to understand their fear. And I've got to try and be friendly about this and not resentful, because after all, they are doing good work. They're doing stuff that does help in some regard. And I've got to remember to remind them, excuse me, that that I do appreciate that by giving them positive feedback and by lending help anyway, even if they're only keeping me at arm's length and allowing me to participate in a peripheral fashion. You know what? If what they're doing is valid, I'm still going to help them all I can and talk them up and say they're good people, because they are. And then there's something else to keep in mind, which is that there's a way to absolutely convert them to your side. They are, a lot of these people, a lot of these larger organizations have confused access to power with having power. They've confused the fact that they can call a senator or a congressman or a CEO's office and instantly get through with the ability to actually get that person to do what you want. They've confused the fact that they can get a sit-down with some big, big wig, and that person's going to listen to them and say all kinds of nice things. They've confused that with that person actually sponsoring or backing legislation or a specific agenda or getting somebody on the ballot who belongs there who wasn't, or changing a law, whatever it is. And it's easy to get confused like that. So I'm not going to sit there like some will do and just criticize them and say, you know, they've sold out and they're fools and they don't know what they're doing. Maybe that's true. But even if it were true, and it isn't in most cases, do I really want to alienate them and push them even further into that camp, or do I want to win them back? And I thought, okay, there's got to be one thing that they're going to respect, that they're going to say, you know what, I've got to get with this guy and all the groups he's with, because it makes sense and it's going to help my effort. And if I don't get with them, I'm going to be left behind. And the answer is keep pushing. Right now, I'm a lot further along than I was 2 years ago when I first started a federal lawsuit against a union all by myself and got a lawyer who, thank God, the National Right to Work Foundation gave me this great lawyer, and I didn't have to pay anything because I had nothing, and I got nothing out of it. It's fine. But the point is, a year later, I was a lot further along than because now, because I had some credential and some background, the stuff I was writing, people were interested in it, and they decided, yeah, I'll publish it. And then 6 months after, people were reading this stuff, and they said, you know, this is pretty good writing. Not a bad-looking guy. I wonder if he can actually speak in public and put two words together. And bit by bit, event by event, campaign by campaign, I've been building a credibility. And I'm not, it's not my power, but I've been building the power of those people around me in my township, in this group, in that group, helping them along. And they don't owe me a damn thing, but they do owe work. So when I come to them, and I'm not asking them, hey, give me some money. I'm not asking them, hey, come over and fix my porch. What I'm asking them is, I've got this action item. I've got this event, this counter event, this rally, this legislative campaign, whatever it is, this militia training group, this brand new group we want to start, whatever it is, and I want your help. And I put that out there. These people who are decent people say, he helped me, and he has the power to help me in the future. And while I'm not worried about him harming me, he has the power to withhold that help. And I'm not going to withhold help from somebody else simply because I resent them. But I'm looking at efficiency here. I only have so much that I can do as a human being. So if I've got something that I can do today, I'm going to do it in concert with the people like Mark, like Robert, like Kelly, that are actually getting something done because it moves the agenda forward. I'm not going to do it with somebody who doesn't bother following through.
Would like to chime in. And so,
please, I need to take a breath.
Call sign. Roll, let's see. Get him in the chat. Roll Tide. So welcome very much, or welcome, I should say, to the show, Roll Tide. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
All right.
Oh, good. And I believe you've called into the show before, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I've called before.
Okay, voice sounds familiar. Go ahead.
Well, I guess...
Some, comments in the chat about our topic tonight, or last night, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, I guess starting off, I'll go to what you guys were just speaking about. And, no, I'm not condemning any work with any party or any group and trying to meet with them and negotiate. I'm just saying if you're not negotiating on equal terms with any of these political parties, then it becomes like the gentleman was just saying. They can pretty much withhold or withdraw whatever support they have, and they're just simply giving you bad terms and wishing to use you. Now, if you create your organization and get to the point to where they actually come to you, then you're talking about a whole different ball game, and you start talking about accountability with politicians and things that actually work instead of the old model of begging or giving good speeches, because, as we all know, power does not respond to beautiful words. It sounds good at a city council meeting when you stand up and say something and, you know, you get your claps and everybody stands up, but, you know, it doesn't move them to move whichever direction you're trying to pull them. The only thing that does that is numbers and people focused in a, you know, real direction. So I get where you guys are going with that. I was just saying that, you know, there's only one way to deal with that type of system, I guess you could call it. Now,
hey, what city are you in?
I'm in Atlanta.
Oh, Atlanta.
Yes, sir, down here in Atlanta. Now the other topics, you want me to go into those or?
Sure, yeah, definitely go ahead.
Please.
Oh, okay. Now, Boko Haram, the Muslim group over there, there's something missing in American news as far as a world view. We get this little simple view of things. This is the bad guy, this is the good guy, there you go. Well, of course, Boko, they're bad guys. But the reality of it is Nigeria is being split into two countries, north and south, and it's going to be separated based on oil. So once these people know this, because this is what happened in the Sudan a few years ago, you're going to have an easy way for militants to be able to recruit people in the north and start up some ruckus. So, I mean, the Nigerian government should have been expecting something like this to happen because, you know, that is life. That is the way it's going to be. If you create that kind of extreme poverty, you're going to have some serious violence going on. The soldier who was traded for the people from Gitmo, any power is going to do that. If they feel like a soldier is going to get out and start making propaganda for the other side, they're going to do whatever they can to get that guy back over to the States. Now, what happens to that guy now that we have him back over here, who knows what happens to that guy. But, yeah, any superpower would have done the same. Except I guess Putin would have poisoned him or something. But either way, no power.
He had knocked him out, punched him, or suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah, no power is going to.
Definitely.
Yeah, no power is going to allow that. Just because of YouTube and, you know, just how fast information can get out there, you can't have somebody giving propaganda for the other side across the world, especially somebody who's really a soldier. You know what I mean? So that gives some legitimacy.
But he's been doing it for 5 years.
Well, you know, sometimes these deals are hard to make, man, you know. And then you got to think about a politician. Everything is timing with them. They're not doing anything without polling it, checking, talking to everybody, and seeing if it's doable first. So that they do nothing off of morality or it's the right thing to do or the right time. Everything is calculated. So, of course, they waited.
Do you think that it had anything to do with trying to take the heat off the Veterans Administration scandal?
That's possible. But a thing like that VA scandal, I mean, couldn't we bring that up for every administration? We've sent people off to war and not taken care of them as a practice.
Oh, you're right.
In this country.
You're right.
My grandfather fought in Vietnam, and he passed away 2 years ago, and some of the stories he told me, man, they will scare you. I can't even remember what the last one was, man, but either way, interesting topics. I've listened to you guys before I started typing. I was already listening. So interesting topics, interesting show.
Well, thank you very much.
Can
we'll
I make
keep
a
your mic on, and as we do, and you know, when you would like
yeah,
to,
I want
to
make
join
a suggestion,
we'll bring it back to you.
Bob,
oh,
I
no
want to
problem.
Make a suggestion and a request. I want this
yeah, go
gentleman
ahead, and then I
want to
bring,
call in.
Kelly back in and then Mark. Go ahead.
Yep. I remind me of his name, please.
Oh,
the fellow we were just speaking
I just,
Naj, yes. I want you to call. My request is this. I want you to call in more frequently, and I want you to call in earlier in the program. You have a very, very direct point of view. And it's not identical to what everybody else is saying, and I think it's very valuable for people to hear it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. Most angry people do have a direct point of view. You know what I mean?
So.
Yeah, we definitely enjoy when you call in. We invite you to come in more often, as he said earlier in the conversation as well.
All right, thanks a lot, man. I will do.
Good.
I wanted to kind of follow up on what was I think it was Dan that was talking earlier. We talk a lot about power, and I try to avoid the use of that word because power, when you say that, different people think of it in different ways. When I think of power, I think of the brute force necessary to subdue somebody into submission. Even if you wield such power, if you use it that way, your, quote, rule won't last long if for no other reason you're mortal. However, if you will consider influence and leadership, what you're doing is now shaping the culture. You're shaping the internal dynamics of that person's moral compass. We've all dealt with people, if you're standing there watching them, they'll work, but the minute you turn your back, they quit working. Well, that means you have to be there all the time, and you have to constantly be exerting that managerial leverage on them. If you can instill a work ethic in that person to where they want to work, they take pride in their work, and they feel that they're going to be rewarded for that work, you don't have to watch them anymore, or certainly not as much. So
those are important distinctions. You're right.
I prefer the use of influence over power. There's also the issue was addressed, you have access to people of power. Well, good point. Having access to power may feel good. It may certainly help you be self-aggrandizing at your little socials when you say, yeah, I met with Congressman so-and-so this morning. But if you don't have any influence, then what's it about? So at the end of the day, people, we have to have influence. If we're going to have influence, our cause has to be just. And our hearts need to be right, and we need to develop a strategy. And I think the reason that I have a hard time, or that I work so hard selling this, is we all want a short-term answer. Power in the short term is more effective, just like punishment is more effective than, rewards. We need to think about the long-term game. I know the house is on fire, and I know we got trouble today, but all of our short-term tactics aren't working. Okay, we need to be prepared to be involved in a marathon run where we're just going to have to influence the culture in a way that is more functional and more sustainable.
Well,
that's a very good point.
Like
the language does make a difference.
Yeah, if I can
I agree. Go ahead.
Well, you can go ahead first, sir.
Well, thank
well,
you.
Just,
well, first I want to see if Kelly, real quick, we'd like to bring up your folks in. First, I want to give Kelly the opportunity to chime in.
There you go.
Kelly?
Okay.
Okay. Well, first of all, we have to let people know that, hey, they can call in. And also, it's coming here, press one. I'm teasing you, Robert. Because we don't have to do this in this conversation. long term, slow, steady will obtain, the classic turtle versus the hare. The powers that be have been at this for decades and really centuries to try to conquer the world for their evil intent. And I've seen a lot of sunshine summer patriots that I've been doing this since I was like 21. More than I ever want to, but the more I get involved, the more necessity it is to be involved. And it's just really, we just have to steady and slow and keep building our contacts. In mass numbers, we have the victories coming at us. So that's pretty exciting. Robert, I kind of want to go back to I want to change the subject and go back to, well, I think, one of your first questions to Mark, as if it's spiritual. I want to come back to that, but I want to hear from Nash. Is that how you pronounce your name?
Yes, sir.
Nash, okay. Yeah, I just want to get hear some of your input.
Well, I don't know if you heard that, what he was talking about it being a spiritual battle. Did you hear any of that, Nash?
No, I didn't, but I believe I've heard, you know, similar discussions before, so I think I can kind of weigh in. If he was speaking from a perspective of spirituality has to be right before you can start to move. Now, I understand that position. I respect that position, but I disagree. I feel like whatever your religion is or whoever the higher power is to you, you can worship that with your family, friends, and people who think alike. But when you start to move for political reasons, you should have those political reasons on the table and try to figure out where it goes and who you can work with. And I don't think you should put up any barriers to where you're stopping somebody from coming into your coalition. Organize, organize, organize. That was the thing the farmers yelled way back when they had the populist movement. Every real movement in America has been based on people realizing, okay, we have a common problem. All of these other issues that we don't agree with each other, we have to put to the side and figure out this common problem. So I think spirituality is something that every man and woman has to figure out for themselves and, you know, be willing to step outside of that too and live in this new world. So, I mean, things
That's
are different now.
You know, there's been several great awakenings, as they're called here in America, where people kind of rediscover their spiritual roots on an individual level, but kind of in a large, large number. And I think we're on the verge of something like that. It may be happening right now. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing, whether it's a specific religion or not, just to be right with decency and with caring for others and being honest. And God, if you believe that, I do. But, you know, folks, power is the word. I know it's a dirty word. I know it's got connotations. That Mark's got a definite point that using words like influence and convincing is what I try to do. But what I try to do is something more. B.F. Skinner was a pretty evil guy. He was a psychologist. And he used something called operant conditioning. He was dissatisfied. My father's a psychologist who used some of that on me, which kind of explains why I'm so warped. But he used operant.
That does explain it, Dan. No.
Yeah, it does. It really does. He looked at psychoanalysis, which went on for 20 years and never solved anything. And he thought, well, how are you going to get this person to actually stop doing drugs, stop being neurotic, start, you know, eating healthy, whatever their problem was, start dealing with whatever their particular demon was. And he said, well, just get them to do it. And then I thought about all these experiments that have showed that if you walk around with a frown on your face, people frown back at you, and it's a negative feedback cycle. And if you have somebody who is depressed, even clinically depressed, even biochemically depressed, if you can give them a mirror and convince them to practice smiling, just the fact that their face is making a smile causes their brain to smile, and it's kind of like it can come from the brain or it can come from the face. So then I thought about, and you mentioned your grandfather who passed away, Naj, who was in Vietnam. I was a saying in Vietnam, because I was just too young to go, and I had a lot of friends from my neighborhood. We had like 40 kids from my block who went. We weren't real rich or anything, and a lot of kids, mixed neighborhood in Philly. And what they said was, grab them by the, and this is after dark, grab them by the short and curlies, and their hearts and minds will follow, if you want to win the hearts and minds. Well, I'm not in favor of brute force. I like to be a little bit more gentle and use a little more finesse, and I really don't want to force anyone to do anything. But it's those action items, it's the tasks that make the difference. If I can talk to somebody and listen to what they have to say and get them to a point where they understand and they're convinced of the truth of the argument, that's tremendous. That's the big step. But it doesn't happen until they take the next step. And the next step is actual tasks, an actual job. Once they actually go to the rally and go to overpasses and hold up a sign, once they actually show up at their borough or council or township meeting and ask a question, once they fill out a Freedom of Information Act request, once they write an article, once they give a speech, once they sign a petition, once they donate some money, once they organize something for somebody else, once they do something, it becomes theirs. They now own it because they did it. It's their action. And they're going to do more if it's a positive action. That's a positive feedback cycle. What's more, they're going to need help, and they're going to want to share that activity. It's kind of like Tom Sawyer, you know. Now, Tom Sawyer, he was a bit of a con man. He didn't really want to paint his aunt's fence, so he pretended it was the best thing in the world that was so much fun, and all the other kids got jealous, and he conned them into painting the fence. I'm not trying to get somebody else to do my work for me. What I am trying to do, and it seems to be succeeding, is get others to start doing some work. Quite frankly, I can't do it all, and I'm not good at a lot of stuff. There's stuff
Dan,
that other people could do. Go ahead.
You've touched on a couple things that bring two illustrations to mind. And you know, you mentioned brute force, and this is kind of a weird analogy, but it's useful for me. There's a difference between a thief and a con man. Now, a con man is a thief, but a thief uses either trickery, or brute force to steal, okay? A con man, on the other hand, gets his victim to willingly hand over what they are seeking, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a biblical principle. It's be wise as serpents, but gentle as doves. Seldom, brute force doesn't last, okay? Genghis Khan understood brute force. He really did. But his kingdom failed because when he died, it all fell apart. And you can go back historically, and there have been many tyrannical regimes that have established kingdoms by brute force and suppression and subjugation. But it doesn't last because when people willingly internalize values that are sustainable, that are worthwhile, that are functional in a society, brute force is only necessary to manage the exceptions to that.
But that's not true anymore. In the modern world, look at North Korea.
You don't think that's brute force?
I think it is, and I think it's lasting. I think it's lasted, and it's even worse than it ever was. I think there's millions of people who've died and been tortured in concentration camps there. And it's force, but it's sophisticated force. They're like the Nazis were. They're very efficient. They use modern techniques. What we're facing is not just some thugs in the government, people who think that they can take what they want and do what they want. It's thugs who actually understand how to make people do these things. And quite frankly, there's a lot of politicians, and I think, didn't someone say the definition of a politician is somebody who can tell you to go to hell and make you look forward to the trip? I mean, there's people who are good at convincing.
I've never heard of that for a while.
But the bottom line is what they can do to you. You know, can they take your home? Right now, yes, they can take your home. Can they search your property, your car? Yes. Can they invade your home? Can they put you away? In individual cases, we're seeing this all over the place. Can they target your business or your nonprofit organization for unfair treatment based on discrimination, based on the ideas that you have, the politics that you represent, simply because you're a threat to them? This happens all over the place, and not just the federal government. So regardless of the semantics of what we're talking about here, what we need to do is a full-bore attack on all possible fronts in all possible ways, short of those that create violence or chaos that harm people or that are confusing. So if I if it's a sophisticated method, a convincing method, I'm trying that. I'm doing that a lot. I'm trying it, seeing if it works. If it's a direct, impactful thing, like getting a write-in candidate elected, which we've done here in Pennsylvania for a Senate seat, which is pretty amazing, it doesn't matter what it is. If it's going to have a chance of working, if it's going to stop the other side in their tracks, cost them time, cost them money, cost them grief, and cost them moving their agenda forward, I'm fine. I'm fine with it. There's a lot of different ways. I don't have them all.
And speaking about – go ahead. Now I'm going to make a point for the question that Cindy from chat has asked, and I think this is a good point
ahead.
To ask the question.
I'm getting kind of tired at 2 a.m. I've been up since before 6 yesterday.
Oh, yeah, certainly. And just to put a little note in, as we already are an hour and a half into the continuation of Friday Night Show, believe that or not.
Robert, and I'm going to have to bolt because I do have obligations tomorrow and my battery's going to go dead here in a minute. But thank you again
sure.
for your hospitality, Robert, and feel free to follow up with me tomorrow on some of the things we spoke about offline.
I will do so.
And I just want to hey,
Mark?
Yes.
Mark? Kelly here. Well, I want to try to follow up to the question Robert posed earlier, kind of get your feedback at the same time. You know, the question posed was, do you think this is spiritual? And, well, I'm going to say yes, of course, but more than that, it's so many different angles. You know, if you look at the powers that be, the Federal Reserve, they have definitely wanted control, and this mentality continues from generation to generation. I just found, for example, something bad the Constitution did compared to the Articles of Confederation. In the Articles, each state could mint and coin their own currency. Hmm. The Constitution came along, that was not allowed. States can't mint their own coinage now. And that was back in our Spirit of Liberty days, Spirit of 76. Now, that's kind of spooky because eventually the banksters, they've tried this 3 times in America to have a central bank print currencies, buy newspapers, buy monopolies, buy corporations, buy congressmen, buy judges, whatever. And that was incredibly dangerous. But yet the secrets of the power of money was given to the Hebrews about 3,000 years ago, Deuteronomy 15. It's fascinating to see how this evil to overturn our rights, make us into slaves, has been going on for millennia. And the founders, they developed the Constitution through prayer. They get in arguments, as men do when they're discussing a point. They have to stop, pray, and then make progress. Go to the next point, argue as men do, stop, pray. And it was amazing. And there's, you know... one of the things I see with the Democratic Party is they claim they care, but they don't. Either that or terribly deceived. What happens with welfare systems...
Hey, Kelly, I hate to cut you off, because I know Mark's got to go. He does have those things he needs to do. So, I mean, if you had a question or something you wanted him to answer, let's go there, because I know he's got to get going. So.
Okay, well, I'll finish this real quick with the Democrats, but... Basically, a lot of fatherlessness, black folk, and it's really sad. That's been the Democrats' agenda, and it's terrible. It's hurt a lot of people. I mean, you raised without a father. Mine died at 6. There are some serious spiritual aspects to this. They had a very beautiful, rich heritage, by the way, spiritually. All right, Mark, what's your thoughts?
Kelly, you raised some good points, but I would raise these points. First of all, you may be familiar with the spirit of Mammon, which has its roots in the love of money. And also, money itself is not an invention of God. That's an invention of man and an invention of government. And the problem is the real spiritual basis of the, you know, we can talk about the Federal Reserve all you want to, whether you can fix that or not. Okay, let's say you fixed it. The problem is that people trust money to provide them with security. And I would say that God's economy is one not of buying and of selling, but one of giving and receiving. And it's the difference between a contract and a covenant. A contract is based on fear and is enforced by law. A covenant is based on willful volition and is self-enforcing. So that's why I say these problems that we have all have their roots in a bigger spiritual problem at its core. The war that we wage, whether it's literally war or whether it's just political battles or competition of ideas and worldviews, are really just manifestations of what the Bible calls spiritual warfare. We're just the pawns in this game. And that's why I say our problems are spiritual. And all the other problems are just manifestations of it. That's the basis of, I don't know
there's,
if that
there's symptoms well, of a bigger problem is what you're saying.
Yes, yes. You know, and you can't solve the symptom. You've got to solve the problem ultimately. You mitigate the symptom, but you've got to solve the problem.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. I really appreciate you coming on to yesterday's show and then the continuation of the show tonight as well. And this, I would even say it's the extended version of the extended version of the other show. So I look forward to talking with you tomorrow and then and having you on the show.
Well, I enjoy sharing with you guys, and I just want to, you know, thank you all and just offer you a word of encouragement and just, you know, let you know we're all, you know, different players on the same team. So, you know, wherever we have an opportunity to get together, I want to reach out and extend a hand of hospitality and fellowship and help. And y'all are great, and I appreciate what you're doing, and I'm sorry I don't get to speak with you as much as I'd like.
Well, yeah, you know me, but if I'd like to, you know, I haven't been able to get into red meat as much as I'd like as well and work on some things that we've discussed some time ago, but, you know, things move slow. It's a marathon.
So.
We'll get to those
right.
points, but well, thank you very much,
thank
Mark.
You
take care, and I'll talk to you later. But
all right. Appreciate
hey.
It.
Goodbye, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. And folks, I'm gonna have to go too. I promised my daughter we've got some activities tomorrow, and so I just won't get some sleep. But I have to get at least some sleep because I'll be driving. So
right.
So I do wish you all well, and thank you.
Good night, Joe.
Well, thank you very
good
much,
night,
Dan. And we did have a question that I'll pose for. And good night, Dan. We'll see you later. Thank you very much for coming on to the show. And so Cindy had a question, and we'll pose this one, and then we'll go ahead and close things out, because I know it's been we've been at this for a little over 4 hours now, so we'll go ahead and get people some rest. So Cindy wants to ask you, well, it's just from you, Kelly, and then you, Raj, is do you think that conservatives have lost momentum since 2012, or do you think that they have gained influence? What do you think, Naj?
Well, I don't really think it's changed any. I just think the real issue is establishment Republicans do not respect conservative values or conservative ideas. So they'll give,
certainly.
You know, the look and they'll let people talk. They'll bring them in. But will they actually put that into legislation? Will they actually go out and campaign for it? Not after they get in office. So I don't think we've had a conservative candidate in the last 30 years, even though most of the right in America is conservative, so that's an interesting thing to look at. But no, I don't think there's any correlation between the two. And this is another thing we have to look at too when we talk about that. With gerrymandering, the right and left were able to kind of get the districts how they wanted them. But what ended up happening was the left became the ultra left as far as the Democrats were concerned, because they didn't really fit with what the people thought in that area. And the same thing happened on the right. They started gerrymandering, and they put this whole big coalition of people on the right together as conservatives and thought, okay, we'll always have their vote. And then they started having town halls and found out what the party thought and what the people thought were two totally different things. So I just think that part is funny as we see these two parties try to manipulate the population and still not being able to do a good job of it, and they have to lie to us to get elected.
That's disgusting. It's lip service. I know. It's unbelievable. I am so I left the Republican Party 10 years ago.
Mm.
You know? It's like, you're going to take us from war without declaring war? And then you're going to do the Patriot Act on us because of 9/11? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. There was a Supreme Court justice who wrote, "The Constitution is good at all times, in wartime, in peacetime." And it was a brilliant statement. You know? They kind of ignored terrible atrocities from the Japanese in World War II. Well, in my county, there's an internment camp, and I think they had like 10,000 Japanese or something, or 5,000, I don't know. But, like, they were Americans. I mean,
right.
if you're really going to go that far, you know, you might as well take my uncle, Bob, who has now graduated to the next life, but he was 100% German. But he was in a B-24. He was a bombardier. He got hit with shrapnel and barely survived, but he lost an eye. And he said, even to this day, I don't even know if I dropped those bombs. But he was full-blooded German. Why didn't they throw him in a detention camp? I mean, just because somebody looks like somebody, he looked just as much like a German as any other German. It's like, what the heck? So why weren't we following the Constitution during World War II with the Japanese? I mean, this is terrible. I mean, our country is, anyway.
Yeah, and then it's like you have to separate the powers that be or people in control from the populace, because what you find a lot of times with a lot of these issues is the people think differently from those in power, and those in power have to try and, you know, by hook or crook to try to manipulate us to their position. But starting off, we are not in that position. And, you know, 24/7 news channels and, you know, constant radio and newspapers and everything, you can kind of pull people along to your side, but it never initially starts off there. So I think that's just more the same of that. The people in power think differently from the people who actually live out here, live and work out here. And we got to somehow get these people to understand that they're going to have to deal with us. And, you know, however we pull that off, you don't eat a whale in one bite, you know. You have to cut it. So people worrying about the Fed and all these other big long-range issues we have to worry about, slowly but surely, you just have to keep chipping away, and things improve.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's stunning how those in power just kind of ignore us once they get our vote.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
That definitely happens a lot. We've even seen that with some Tea Party candidates. But anyway, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and take some parting words from both the gentlemen, and then I'm going to go proceed to close out the show. I want to thank everyone for coming in tonight to this portion of the show, the continuation of the Friday night June 6th show, since we got cut off during part of the extended period. So we set up another show so we could get that in. So hopefully, folks, if you're wondering what we're talking about, go ahead and go back and listen to the archive of the previous show before this one to give you more of a foundation on what the show was about tonight. And so we will bring it to you, Naj, first. And, of course, as we all said, you're welcome to call in anytime and be a part of our roundtable discussions. And so if you have any parting things you'd like to say before we close out the show, you have the mic.
Well, just because I'm an amateur historian and I'm petty, I have to go into the part about Genghis Khan that the man said. The Khans did not fall after Genghis died. They actually ruled for hundreds of more years and owned the biggest continuous landmass in history. That was the Mongols. And up until, I think, his grandson, Kublai Khan, who tried to invade Japan and was repelled by somehow the Japanese called divine winds. He was actually hit by two typhoons on both invasions who decimated his troops. So without those typhoons, who knows what Japan would have been if the Mongols would have actually got on the soil. So
yeah,
the Mongol story is deep, man. You really should look into it, man. It's very, very interesting.
Well, didn't once Genghis Khan conquered, then there was a group called the Tumans. I believe that's who they were. And they had a very good, sophisticated system of law. What somebody was telling me. And it was
adopted from the Chinese, that the Mongols had kind of invaded China and took a lot of their administrative ideas, administrative workers, and they were able to kind of set up their government based off of that, and that's why it was able to last so long. But, yeah, if they make it into Europe, who knows what happens. They actually did go to Baghdad, and some people say they set Islamic society back more than 300 years with how much knowledge and books and, I guess, culture, you could say that they lost in the sacking of Baghdad by the Mongols. So, yeah, look into them, man. It's interesting, man. I know this is nerd stuff, but
it sounds like
check it out.
Well, it's really fascinating stuff.
You tell me that brings it over to you, sir.
Oh, my mouth is running off too much.
I hear you.
Y'all
said 4 hours, bro.
Tired.
That's a long time. 4 hours.
Yeah. I'm mostly working.
We did a two-hour show, and then we went to extended version, got in about 15 minutes of it, maybe 17 minutes of it, and then some happened technically to cut us off. And so we had to start a new show, and we got back on at about 12:30. So we're definitely working into our fourth hour for the show. So it's 2:15 a.m. here as well, and I've been up almost 24 hours. So, which that's okay. That's not anything that's rare for me. It's the folks who are regulars here know that. But go ahead, Kelly, then. If you don't have anything more, I want to thank both you guys for coming on and coming on to the second part of yesterday's show. And we will have a show this coming up Wednesday, and we'll have a candidate coming on. Ken, I have to look at my notes. This is where he's coming on. But definitely check out our show for this coming up Wednesday, the 11th of June. I can't believe it's going to be the 11th of June already. And so I want to thank everyone. And, of course, two things. Check out the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com and just listen to part of the show. You can also hear more about the Patriot Journalist Network at the previous show to this one, and also earlier on in this program. Tonight, this extra program. And also check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. We've got some nice links on there as well as also in our Give page. There's some wonderful organizations and charities that would appreciate anything that you can do to help them out. And, of course, which helps Bard's Logic Political Talk out. And if you go to our affiliates page, and especially check out the Go Sun Stove, the solar oven that is portable. You can take it with you whether you're camping or on the beach or at a picnic or, of course, down in Washington, D.C. at Operation American Spring. You do not need to bring any fuel because with the Go Sun Stove, you use the power of the sun to cook your food. And there also is a video that tells more about the Go Sun Stove there on the Bard's Logic Political Talk affiliates page. And so thank you very much, and I will end tonight as I do every night, and that is with the song
hey,
by
Robert.
Aubrey Ashburn. Yes.
Hey, Robert. Oh, yeah. Nash, I'm sorry. Yeah, please call in again, man.
no doubt. Thanks a lot, man. Good talking to you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. We look forward to hearing from you and having you join and be a part of our roundtable discussions. And so you can hear more of Aubrey Ashburn's songs by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. So take care, everyone, and we shall see you next time, and good night. And
good night.
Finally be able to hear the whole of the song without being turned off. So I'm going to appreciate that. Good night.